Well, we got a big day tomorrow. Tomorrow is Whooping Crane Day. And just in time to celebrate it, we're talking about these beautiful endangered birds with our guest, Ann Lacy, back with us once again. She's Vice President of North America Programs at the International Crane Foundation. And we'll talk cranes and what's going on with the Whooping Crane Day with her. And I hope you'll join in with your own questions, comments, and maybe experiences to share. Have you seen a whooping crane in the wild? Give us a call. The number 800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Ann Lacy, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It's such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for getting us in when you're winding down your little job there.
Yeah,
thank you.
It's only a well, let's see, we're almost to the end of May. One more month.
Who's counting? Larry, it is well deserved, much deserved, well earned.
Well, yes. Thank you.
Happy to talk cranes.
Yeah. Well, tomorrow's Whooping Crane Day. What are you how are you celebrating, and how can others celebrate with you?
Heck yeah, we got a lot going on. It's a short week from a holiday. But, you know, in this day and age, when you can make your own holiday for anything, we want to celebrate whooping cranes. And good friend of the crane, Paul Smith, was just talking about turkeys. But I would argue that sandhills and whooping cranes are going to be on that list of conservation success stories, too. Sandhills certainly are, and we want whooping cranes to be as well. And so as if people can join us for a webinar on our outreach programs and how we get into communities to help people celebrate the whooping cranes where they are, we have a webinar coming up at 1 o'clock today. And Alicia Ward, our outreach coordinator, is going to be talking about our programs there throughout our flyway. So we just need to go to savingcranes.org/webinar. And you can sign up. It's easy to do, and you'll get the link. But all of our webinars for all of our fantastic programs are listed there as well. So that's happening today.
Right after the show.
Right after the show, yep.
Are you part of that? Are you zipping from one spot to the next?
I don't need to do this webinar. I have done quite a few in the past. But Alicia's got this well in hand talking about her program, and so it'll be great.
So savingcranes.org/webinar.
Correct. Yes.
To go to that.
They will be stored. So if you don't make it today, it'll be online and you can watch it at your leisure too.
And we do have a link on to the webinar on our website as well.
Correct.
At wpr.org/Larry. So there we go. Well, what's going on with whooping cranes this time of the year? Laying eggs.
We have baby cranes. We do have, this is nesting season, so that all of our birds have returned back to Wisconsin. We have about 64 birds in this population that we are tracking. And so we have about 14 nesting pairs, and we have documented at least two that have hatched out in the last week or so. So we anticipate more, and we do have active nests that are still going on. And so hope springs eternal that they'll be able to hatch out those kiddos. In the meanwhile, we are also here at ICF and our breeding center partners. There is a lot going on with egg management and all of our eggs and young chicks under human care that are being raised for our reintroduction. So we are still releasing birds into Wisconsin as part of our reintroduction. But what we really are focusing on a lot is really training those birds up well so they can survive and come back and breed themselves so we don't have to intervene anymore. That's our measure of success.
And if I'm not, I think I'm right on this. Whooping cranes are among the oldest living bird species on Earth.
Yes.
Are they not?
Yep. Cranes as a family. For certain, the crane family tree is much discussed. The crowned cranes in Africa, of course, branched off pretty early, low on that tree. But there are fossil specimens from North America that are probably closely related to the crowned cranes that are now existing in Africa. So yeah, they're a very, very old family. So well established on this planet Earth before it looked like it does now.
Jane's wondering, how many eggs does a female lay?
All crane species, well, with the exception of the crowned cranes that can lay more, they're a bit smaller. Cranes lay 2 eggs. So our Santo cranes and whooping cranes in North America will lay 2 eggs. They sometimes lay 1, can lay 3. It's rare. I know of people that have recorded 3-egg nests. I have yet to see it myself in 26 years. And they have to sit on those eggs for about 30 days before they hatch. So they get to while away this early spring, sitting on those eggs, waiting for them to hatch.
It's a long time to sit.
Yeah, it is. Especially given some of the things that they have to deal with. You know, black flies was a big deal there for a while that was really inhibiting their nest success. So what we call nest constancy, the ability to continually incubate those precious eggs. So we've kind of have a workaround for the black fly issue and allowing them to incubate that full term. And now it's focusing on those chicks and making sure that habitat is correct so that they have everything that they need to protect those young chicks and raise them upright.
Yeah. How successful are you with the eggs? I mean, within the foundation, those you have at the foundation.
Oh, really good. You know, that's the one. There's many steps along the way on this path to success. And, you know, they have to migrate successfully. They have to pair and they have to set up territories and all that is going well. And they are laying fertile eggs. That's no small feat. The fertility of these birds is well over 90%. So that is fantastic. And so some of the eggs that we do collect from wild nests here in Wisconsin come into our breeding centers to be raised by people. But we also still have our birds that are in human care that are breeding themselves. So or that we use artificial insemination because we want to make sure that the genetics of this population continue to be optimal. And that's good too.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. In the wild, do cranes mate for life?
Oh, that's a good question. And the answer is mostly. We hold cranes up to be, you know, they're symbols of longevity and this pair bond and this wonderful family unit and parental care. And all that is true. But yes, they can divorce. We have documented divorce, but it is pretty rare. So they usually stick together. Once they find a mate that they like and how they choose is still something that, you know, they're not telling how they choose. But for the most part, it lasts for their lifetime, which could be 20 or 30 years in the wild.
That's wonderful. Last month, you held your annual Midwest Crane Count. How'd that go?
It went really, really well. I think we're still waiting on the compilation for that, but all of the results are online and people can see. You know, it started as such a small little thing in Wisconsin, just kind of a lark, like let's get kids out and count cranes because they're starting to show up more and more in Wisconsin. This is in the 1970s. And by the 80s, it was a real thing. And now it is well established through Wisconsin, Michigan, Minnesota, Iowa, and Ohio, Illinois. So it is truly a Midwest crane count. And we had to further amend the name. It's not the Sandhill Crane Count anymore because whooping cranes are also being counted on that. So that is really a success.
Yeah. And the whooping cranes are endangered, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Correct. Yep. So here in Wisconsin, in North America, we only have 2 of the 15 crane species. And one, the sandhill, happens to be the most numerous crane species in the world. And the other is the whooping crane, which is the rarest crane species in the world. So we have the bookends that are here in Wisconsin. And there's places that you can go and you can see them on the regular in the breeding season, which is pretty special.
Yeah. What caused them to become endangered? I mean, why?
Yeah, that it was a real confluence of events, driven mostly by European colonization moving westward So we had subsistence hunting, and that turned into collecting. When, you know, we have a rare species, sometimes the idea was we better get our collecting in before they're completely gone. But as part of that westward expansion, it was also draining of wetlands, getting rid of the prairie potholes, and really changing the landscape fundamentally. So their nesting grounds was disappearing. So kind of all of that kind of came together. And it wasn't even until the 1950s for the whooping crane that we knew where their breeding area was. They would show up on the Texas coast, the last remnant population, and it got down to 15 birds.
Wow.
But they disappeared in the spring, and they would come back with their young, and the population was starting in the 30s and 40s to crawl back up. You know, they numbered, then there was 30, then there was 40, then there was 50. But it took a long time to even find their nesting grounds because they were forced way up into northern Canada to Wood Buffalo National Park. And so that population now, happily, is well over 550 birds. And so all of our reintroductions that we support here in Wisconsin and a non-migratory population in addition in Louisiana are all going towards the target of downlisting the species from endangered. But overall, they still are very much an endangered species.
And how many reside in Wisconsin or come to Wisconsin?
So we have about 64 that we know of for sure that we're tracking.
Ann Lacy, our guest today, Vice President of North America Programs at the International Crane Foundation. We've been talking about hoopers and mentioned sandhills a little bit as well. Questions for her or maybe an experience to share, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Tomorrow on the show, we'll revisit some conversations about the importance of local school boards. We'll talk with the author of Out of Rubicon, A Grandfather's Notes on His Life, and take a look at the history of Madison's Bree Stevens Field. That's a revisit. I'll be on my way to Bayfield to set up for Bayfield in Bloom radio program for Garden Talk on Friday, kind of looking forward to seeing everybody there. Those tickets are long gone, but we still do have tickets for a few left, I think, for my talk on June 3rd at the Barrymore Theater in Madison, where Jill Nadeau and I will be taking a look at my 59 years on the air here at Wisconsin Public Radio. So looking forward to all that. Right now we're talking cranes. Zeroed in on hoopers a bit, but we can certainly talk sandhills and others as well with our guest, Ann Lacy. And I know Jeff in Milton has a question. Let's go there. Jeff, hi.
Hi. We've got land between Coloma and Adams Friendship and Adams County. And if we get on our cameras, we get bears, and we had an elk a couple of years ago and mountain lions. We report all that to, you know, the DNR's got that website where you can report all that. But we also have whooping cranes that'll show up, pairs of them in our area. Would the DNR like us to also report those when we see them, or do they know where all 64 already are? What should we do if we see a pair?
Fantastic that you have them on your property. I love that. I love that. The International Crane Foundation, as part of our partnership with the reintroduction of whooping cranes, we absolutely never assume that we know where they're all at, although they are very heavily monitored, of course, and a lot of them have radio transmitters or satellite transmitters. But there's a spot on our website, again, at savingcranes.org, report a whooping crane sighting that you can put all of the information that you need to in that. So where you saw it, if they were doing something interesting or where they were doing it, if you saw their bands. So there's a spot that we'll put again on the website where you can directly have your observations entered, and rest assured that is absolutely data that we use. So thank you. enjoy those whooping cranes.
Yeah, savingcranes.org. That's the place to go.
Yeah, report a whooping crane sighting.
Thanks, Jeff, for calling. Appreciate it. John and McFarland, we'll go to you now. Hi, John.
Thank you. I just wanted to say, related to sandhill cranes, out on the bike trail this morning between Lake Farm Park and Lake Wabisa, came around a corner on the trail, and there's two adult cranes and two little baby chicks. They had to be fairly newborn, pretty fuzzy and pretty tiny, but just great to see.
Oh, that's great. I bet everybody was surprised. That is a really good point that, you know, sandhills have a unique ability to really adapt to our human-dominated landscape, as evidenced by birds on the bike trail, but, you know, birds in your backyard could easily be a sandhill crane. And so that is wonderful, but especially family groups like that, they're wonderful to see, but always, you know, just observe from afar. You know, they will be very, very protective of those youngins, and they are tall birds that can look you in the eye and will defend themselves and their babies. So we really advocate for folks to not feed them, as wonderful as that feels. They are great at finding their own food. And there's plenty of food out there for an omnivore crane. But it's wonderful to see them like that, especially the young ones at this time of year. But please don't feed them. It never ends well for the crane. And you can enjoy them even still. So yeah. That is a great sighting, John. Thank you.
Yeah, I love that, John. Thank you so much for calling. Someone else emailed wondering about the recent impact of bird flu on crane populations. Also, what could be done to protect them?
Recent impact was this last calendar year. Thankfully, there was not that much impact from avian influenza. It still exists. The highly pathogenic form of avian influenza is still out there operating globally. It is with us. It is here, not going away. So there's not much we can do to keep them from getting it other than to make sure that there is adequate habitat that spreads them out so they don't all of our cranes in one wetland, we can use the eggs in the basket metaphor. 2 winters ago, there was a significant die-off of sandhills as they were returning to Wisconsin from their wintering grounds. But we don't know the impact because we have a systematic count. It is sponsored by the Fish and Wildlife Service. And unfortunately, that was last fall when we would have been able to see if there was a potential dip in the population. It was during the government shutdown, so a lot of our federal partners couldn't get out to places and count. So we're going to have to wait another while to see if there was an impact. But right now, we are working globally on a lot of crane populations to make sure that, again, it's a habitat issue, making sure that they have a lot of protected places where they can spread out. We did lose a whooping crane to HPAI, again, the highly pathogenic avian influenza, but just one, which we thought that was a horrible loss, but we counted our lucky stars that it was only the one.
Yeah, I remember we talked about that last October, if I'm not mistaken,
yes.
on the show.
It had just happened then. It was a real shock.
Another matter relating to the demise of some whoopers. This spring, there were two whooping cranes poached in, not here, but in Louisiana. And, you know, all right, two doesn't sound like much, but...
Yeah. And when we're talking less than 100 birds, that means that you can easily say a percentage of the population is now gone. And it is very, very hard to stomach that kind of loss for that cause, shall we say. So again, we have the International Crane Foundation has staff on the ground in Louisiana. Alicia might talk about that on her webinar in 10 minutes. That we are focused on the community pride to really know that there are birds in Louisiana, and all the places that we work these birds are existing in the culture that they are. The culture in Louisiana is different from Wisconsin, is different from Texas, is different from throughout that flyway. So we really work within those communities, having people understand what these birds are, what they mean, and really have them take pride in it, to really try to see if we can stop these poaching incidents before they start. That's really our focus.
I think about all the thousands of hours that have gone into, tens of thousands of hours that have gone into trying to save and keep everyone alive and expand the population. So it's just
blood, sweat, and tears go into these birds, believe me.
Yeah. Carol in Verona. Your turn. Hi, Carol.
Hi there. Hi, Larry. Congratulations on your retirement. I hope it's a wonderful time. We will really miss you. I'm calling about sandhill cranes. And the fellow who called about seeing the babies on the bike path put me in mind of last summer. We had a family, and by this time the chicks were full grown, so there were two chicks, and the male and female. And while we were away, the male thought he was seeing another male and absolutely destroyed our windows on the back of our house. The windows were intact, but he attacked them. It looked like a crime scene, and totally destroyed the screen that was on the window. It was incredible. My husband threatened that we had to stop donating to the International Crane Foundation.
But you didn't.
Please don't.
But you didn't.
We're here to help. Oh, Carol. Yeah. The not so good news is you're not alone. That's actually, we get a lot of calls about that. And we think that cranes, again, they're highly territorial, especially when they have their families. And if they see an interloper, they will take care of it. So this is actually, there's things that you can do to mitigate that. And, you know, it's blocking it or getting rid of that reflection. And one thing that might help and will help lots of other birds is if you have plain glass windows, you don't need to worry about it with a screen. But to put anti-collision marking on your windows for songbirds. But for cranes, you have to go a step further. So blocking that window, making sure that if they're attracted because of bird feeders, moving those bird feeders away so that they don't even come up to them. You know, you kind of have to outsmart cranes. That's 99% of my job, Carol, is outsmarting cranes on a regular basis.
Oh, man.
So give us a call. If it happens again, we'll troubleshoot with you.
All right.
Thank you for your support.
Carol, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. I was thinking back. I was playing golf at the Odana Golf Course in Madison, and we were walking along, and there was a pair with a young, I didn't see it until we were relatively close, and the one flapped its wings and up in the air and made itself as big as possible and jumped up and down. And we sort of, you know, then turned away and got away from it. But
thank you for letting the crane win, Larry.
Yeah, I was not going to fight with argue with that crane, but they were sure fun to see through the summer. Well, Ann, it's been a pleasure. And in just 2 minutes, people are going to be able to watch.
Our webinar. Yep. And there's just so many things going on around the world, around North America with whooping cranes, but all of our programs around the world. Find out more at savingcranes.org. But Larry, I want to thank you for your support of all of our crane work throughout the years. Thank you so much. You know, the door is always open at the Crane Foundation for your visit.
I will. I visited many times, and I'll be doing it again. Thank you, Anne, very much.
Thank you.
By way of full disclosure, we should mention that the International Crane Foundation is one of WPR's many business sponsors, so appreciate that as well, and appreciate Anne Lacey, who's Vice President of North America Programs at the International Crane Foundation. And thank you very much for listening. And stay with us. Lots more in store here on WPR News.